Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Johan Oldenkamp from Pateo.nl about the holy science, about God, the creation of man, the Ten Commandments, and the different layers of creation and the structure, pretty much, of the reality that we find ourselves in. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the experiential levels that we have currently, and the almost the way I see it, the perfection of the imperfections within it, because of the way that it actually managed to teach us so much. I mean, I'm not saying that human beings should suffer or not trying to improve the system that we have and all that, but it's ironically in the very imperfections of the structure that we find ourselves in that we have, we can gain that experiential level of understanding the laws and the wholeness and everything that you described. So it's kind of a predicament. It's kind of an interesting situation that we find ourselves in. So how do we approach this? Because let's say that we follow through on the utopian ideals of actually creating paradise on earth and everything else. What do you think, Johan, would happen with that experience of the deeper and darker levels to get the picture of the whole if human beings were born into that system? I mean, personally, I don't think that utopia is ever going to be something that is achieved, actually. As even the word implies, it means no place or a non-existent place. But how do you view that, Johan?
Thank you, Henrik. That's a really intriguing question. I'm a scientist, so I approach everything from a functional perspective. And that means that everything in our reality, whether you like it or not, has a function. Otherwise, it would not be here. So what I try to do instead of judging it, condemning it or whatever, try to label it, I try to understand, why is it here? What is the function? What is the reason of its existence? And then we can understand that actually everything we want to get out of our paradise, which doesn't belong in our utopia as we think it is, has a meaning, has a function, has a sense. So we need all those, you can call them bad things, but they're not bad. They just have their own of way of doing. We need all those things in order to climb up to a higher level of understanding. Otherwise, we could not be ascending, so to say. So everything has a function. I really like the work of Geert Hamer, the guy who was a physician in Germany and who discovered that a lot of things that were commonly accepted as true were the opposite of true. And he called it new German science, new German medicine.
German new medicine. Yeah, I know the guy.
Medicine. Yeah, yep. Got watering right wrong. But of course, it has nothing to do with German, and it's not new either. It's to me, it's the only true understanding of how we can deal with health and how can we improve health. So it's different. In my holy science, I use a different name for it. I call it an upgrading program for our physiology, our psychology, and our psyche, our soul, so to say. But that doesn't really matter. What I like about his approach is that that he also says everything has a function. So a disease has a function, and if you have, for instance, cancer cells in your body, they have a function. So when you take that functional perspective, then suddenly it doesn't become a threat anymore, and you don't have to fight it or to destroy it. You just understand the function, and when you don't like it, then you just change the conditions that that thing, whatever it is, needs to in order to exist. So when you don't like the disease you have, then you understand first need to understand where it's coming from, and when you change that inner environment, then that disease, as most people call it, will simply disappear. So without what hospitals are doing, they are fighting the symptoms, but that's not helping. It only makes things worse. When you really want to be healthy, you have to understand the true root causes, and you can change those root causes. And the same is true for our society. When we don't like the society we live in, where the rich people get more money and the poor people get less money, and when the trouble we create with the nature and with the animals and with the plants and so on, when and the seas and the fish and everything, when that is all increasing and increasing, then we cannot change it by saying we should not do that. No, we should understand why we do this. Why? What is the root cause? And that root cause is, of course, money, and gain and power and control and all those things. So we need to change those root causes if we want to create a paradise. That's how it is.
I would have to say that I think that, you know, power and the need for control and everything is also a symptom. It's a symptom of something that we have within us as human beings. So the need to control others, the need to dominate, the lack of, if you will, even self-esteem to live in the world without the setting up the barriers around us to protect us. I think that it's kind of like what I believe German New Medicine talks about as well, that disease talks, you know, stems from different psychological traumas, basically, that you have. There's issues that occur within your psyche, and therefore this takes a shape in the external world, I believe. So if that's the case, how do we begin to tackle those? Because then that doesn't mean if we burn all the money, or if we destroy all the guns, or if we eradicate all the systems of control or whatnot, these are going to come out in new shapes and new forms, and people are still going to be violent and greedy and everything else, right?
Yeah, I fully agree here, Henrik. I'm happy that you also know a lot about this way of thinking, because that makes it more easy. And the work of Hamer shows that we have to go back to the original impact. And only when we are able to psychologically handle that impact and change it in ourselves and accept the way the solution that has been offered to us, the solution, how it works, then we are able to heal from that, because it's all about healing. And those impacts we have on a personal level, on a individual level, but also at a collective level, the level of our society, of the whole humankind. So it's not easy to deal with that, so we need to kind of global healing to get out of that. And I fully agree with you that the need for control is not a root cause, it's a symptom, and that symptom is that we lack something.
And
it's time that we need to face that. And I think when we put ourselves under God again, then we can understand what we have been lacking, because that lacking, some people like to call it love, but love is a very, it's that word has been used so many times in so many different meanings that it's difficult to see what love is. But to me, love is light. That's the same, and light means life. So light, life, love, all L words, they all refer to what we get from God. You can also call it the Holy Spirit. It's to me, it's also the same. So when we place ourselves under God again, then we, when we receive directly from God that divine, that godly, I did it nearly wrong, that godly love, light, and life energy. And then we don't need to compensate it anymore with, for instance, the need to control others, or need to control nature or the weather or whatever. We just accept the love we receive, and that's enough. It's completely nourishing, and we don't need anything else anymore.
Do you think that a fear of death, fear of the lack of a guiding force or hand, and even the lack of a purpose, is what's causing some of this? I mean, let's think about that for a moment. If we look at the basic scientific outlook today, that more or less it seems to be that the guiding kind of purpose, if you will, isn't really there. It's all accidental to a certain degree. It's all a mishmash of variables that have come together under the conditions of the, you know, physical universe, and that's it, you know, kind of thing. And now we find ourselves here, you know, and that is a problem itself. And then just to juxtapose that and do the opposite to bring some balance to the discussion, it's also, of course, very, very detrimental and dangerous if we talk about people who believe that they are in, let's say, direct contact with the creator or God or whatever, doing the bidding for them, and of course taking actions into the world by their own righteousness, that this is it, because I know, because I'm in contact with God. That's a flip side of that. But finding a balance between purpose, guiding force, and overcoming fear of death, is that key, do you think, to advancing forward in our understanding?
Of course, we need sense of purpose. We need to know what the meaning of life is, but God will not tell us that. That's something we have to find out for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
When we look at the universities, the academic theories, the idea of coincidence is a major explanation in nearly every theory. But to me, coincidence cannot exist. Coincidence is misunderstood dynamics. When we do understand the dynamics, then we don't need the concept of coincidence. But for instance, the theory of Charles Darwin, the so-called evolution theory, which is absolutely not scientific, but that is based on the idea of coincidence and many other theories as well. So that is not helping us at all. That's not real science. That's I call it science fiction. So we need to know why things are happening. What is the cause? What is the root cause? And what is the cause and effects of everything? And by doing that, then we can understand how this universe is actually working, because it's a system. It's a perfectly balanced system. And if we understand the way it works, then we can use that system to make our life the way we want it to be, because the meaning of life is in essence just find our way home. That's the meaning of every life, at least for a life of human beings, because we have the capacity to find our way home. We can do that. I don't think a tree can do that, but I'm not sure about that. But at least we humans are able to do that. I know that for sure. So that's our meaning of life. But we can also we can enjoy our life to the maximum. We can create a utopia, as we talked about before. We can create paradise here on this planet together. We can live in harmony with all animals and with all plants and with each other until we think it's time to move on to the afterlife. So
but that's not how, that's the, again, that's the interesting thing here, that's not how it works on this level, right? I mean, everything we see out there, and I understand there's other people who have a different viewpoint on this, and sure, there are, to a certain extent, cooperation within nature. Certainly, I mean, the majority of what we do in the human world is also cooperation, and very, very little actually in that whole process is direct competition. But the fact that the predatory kind of situation that we see out there in the real world, there are animals out there, and they eat each other, or they eat the vegetables out there. That's like, that's what we can observe and witness in that scenario of how nature is structured. So I mean, we're never, that's how would that cycle is not going to break anytime soon. Although people, you know, they have the perception that it's going to do that, the lamb is going to lay down with the lion, etc. You know, all those kinds of things. It's not how things work on our level, right?
Yeah, but that's an assumption, Henrik.
how do you mean? Explain that.
Yeah, when you look at the wording of the the first chapter we talked about, the first chapter of Genesis, when you see what we need for our diet, then the book is really clear about that. That first clay tablet text, because it says that vegetarian food, just eating plants, green food, so to say, is enough for not only human beings but also for all animals.
I don't agree with that, though. I mean, my wife can't do a vegetarian diet. She's tried due to her blood type. She's O or O negative, I believe it is, and she suffered from hypoglycemia. She literally cannot do. She has to have meat protein. She cannot do vegetables. She's tried it, and she's been close to going into a coma and everything else. I believe that there's some people who can do that and can live and function well on it. So that's one flip side on it right away, but. If we disregard just the human level, let's say, and what I was talking about was the animals out there, that's their scenario, what they live in their sphere, if you will. It's predatory, right?
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. For me, is everything is a reflection of consciousness. So let's take first another example, the weather. We can see that the weather is getting more and more extreme. The hurricanes become more powerful, and so on, the flooding. So when we look at the statistics from, let's say, 100 years, then we see that the weather is getting more and more extreme. And to me, that's a reflection of consciousness. Some people think that's the technology of AARP, HARP, mm-hmm. is also influencing the weather. But I think also we do it with our consciousness. And when we have a quiet consciousness, when we are balanced, then also the weather will be balanced. But if we are really upset, like we are at this current day of time, then the weather is also like that. And I think that also the animal life is also a kind of reflection of the consciousness of the human beings, because we have a role to play on this planet. We are the the guardians. We are we are supposed to rule over this planet to make sure that everything is okay, and we're not really doing a good job at the moment. But when we would do a good job, I don't think the animals would eat each other anymore. But that's all speculation. I don't know. But when I look at the text, that's what I only know, the text of the first chapter of Genesis, and then the lower verses. So the verses 28 and 29, if I'm correct. Let me see if I find it directly. Yeah, it doesn't really, everybody can look it up for themselves. But when you look carefully at those wordings, then the conclusion I draw from that is that we can all eat from green food. Unless, of course, like your wife's case, unless there is some deficiency, something is not working well in the body, then of course you can do whatever is necessary to repair that.
What would you think would happen if, let's say, all the animals didn't eat each other? We'd have a lot of animals on this planet. There'd be a lot of critters running around.
It will not change in one day, of course.
I get that. I'm just kind of being a little bit facetious, but you know, nonetheless, it's just that I guess what I'm saying, when I view the nature out there, no matter that we humans have a picture that it's wrong or it's negative or it's violent and bloody and it's awful and we have emotional issues with dealing with that, but the animals out there have a purity in the way that they find themselves in the world. There's no psychological issues or emotional instability there. They're very, very clean in their way that they live their lives. And I see nothing wrong with that or nothing evil in itself. I'm saying that the system as it is it's beautiful. It's a wonderful, you know, creation and an ecosystem of balance out there. And I think that when humans come into the picture and try to fix it or repair it, that's when things go wrong. It's like nothing's wrong with it. It's we who are upsetting the system when we try to, you know, adjust it or change it. But, you know, that's just my view, Johan. I don't know what you think about that.
We're totally on the same page on that. Every time we try to influence from our limited way of thinking and think that we are correcting the system, we try to save endangered species or we try to save the forest or whatever we try to do, all those attempts are totally pointless because that's not how things are working. So we need to understand how nature really works before we can do anything. And as long as we don't do that, it's pointless to try to interfere.
Yeah, you know what? I just thought about a thing. I just want to mention this, and please carry on after that. I didn't mean to break you up. But it's funny that when you look at it, there's a flip side between politics and eco-politics, if I can put it that way, and the human world and the natural world, because everything is about conservative when it comes to the natural world and preserving, you know, species and animals and everything else, that the outlook is that we need to kind of freeze frame everything that is right now. And even, you know, even if a tree falls in over a river where salmon travel, it's now the human's job to, you know, cut up that tree and remove it out of the way and build a little, you know, ledge for the fish that they can go up on, because we need to help them out. Although they've done this for millions of years. But anyway, there's a conservative tendency there, but when we think about the human world, it's all about moving away from that, and it's a more, you know, so-called progressive view, almost that it's about advancing the human species forward in that regard. So I just find that, you know, that flip side, you know, kind of juxtaposed situation there really funny. But nonetheless, please go ahead, Johan. I didn't mean to break it up there for you.
No, it's okay. That reminds me of a kind of video I saw, or maybe it was a slideshow. I don't know. A guy who was trying to help a caterpillar. A caterpillar was turning into a butterfly, and the phase in between, I think it's the cocooning phase, was going too slow when coming out of the cocoon. So the guy tried to help the nearly butterfly to get out of the cocoon. But by doing so, by cutting it open, the butterfly was not able to strengthen the wings strong enough to make it.
Wow.
It was faster out of the cocoon. But the butterfly was never able to fly anymore because the wings were not dried enough in a proper way.
Well, see, that's a beautiful, beautiful analogy for what we're looking at, because in that process of struggle that the butterfly is having, or the caterpillar at that stage, that's what's strengthening it so that it can survive, so that it can make, you know, the necessary you know, moves and journeys that is to come for it. But when we aid it, and again, it's all very well-meaning, it's all very good intended, and you know, loving-hearted and everything else. But we're doing them a disservice in that process, and so much in life, in politics, and everything else is kind of mirrored in that situation that we believe that we are helping and doing the right thing, but in actuality, which is contradictory, of course, but we're actually harming it. Yep. And that's kind of part of that mirror world that you've been talking about so much, that, you know, the black is white, the white is black, is everything has a flip side and a mirror to it, right?
Yeah, indeed. And when we don't understand the whole picture, the full picture, then we can easily take the wrong decision and do the opposite of what we intend to do to create. So it's extremely important that we first know and then we do. But unfortunately, when we look at our worlds, then we do mostly the opposite. We first do, and then we start to understand or try to understand how things really work, and then find out that we've been probably doing the opposite of what we actually wanted to accomplish.
Exactly. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so knowledge before action. And that's why I also focus on holy science, because we need to understand the bigger picture before we try to change some parts within that bigger picture. Zoom out first before we zoom in.
And that's not easy to do sometimes.
No, it's my mind sometimes explodes because there is so much in there that has to be connected, and it's not always easy. But yeah, fortunately for me, I'm more a generalist than a specialist. So I like to know some things about everything instead of everything about some things. And that's that's helped me to create this framework of everything, because everything does fit in that framework. And that will hopefully bring us to the next paradigm. But when we come back to the talk we had about the animals, I think that it will take very long before animals do no longer eat each other. But in the end, I think that will happen, but it will take many generations. Just like at this moment, also species are going extinct and other species are coming into the picture. That will happen also with all the other animals. So I do believe, that's what I said before, I do believe that the way the animal world is functioning is a reflection of our collective state of mind, our collective thinking, our collective consciousness. And when we change our collective consciousness, then the weather will change, but also the animals will change, and also the plants will change. And that's also in line with for instance, the work of the books of Anastasia, probably you know about them, that we can actually live in harmony with nature in a totally different way than most people have understood so far. When we, for instance, put a seed under our tongue, before we put it in the soil in a respectful way, then exactly that's the things we need for our body, our deficiencies in our own physical body, those substances are created by that plant. And that's a kind of magic, but that's how it really works. So nature can adjust, can adapt to our own needs. And that's very beautiful.
Yeah, there are a number of scenarios where actually the plants around you, depending on where you live on the planet, and depending on what conditions even the soil and the earth is right there. I mean, you literally can, for example, be helped if you have you're sleep deprived, have issues with rest and stuff like that. Take off your shoes, go outside, and ground yourself to you know, level out the charge, if you will. There's other ways where you can see that the plants that grow and the different so-called weeds, right? You know, dandelion and nettle and all these beautiful things, grow in an area where you're probably going to need those things, because there's a deficiency in the environment or something is going on with an instability, so that the nature provides you know, the additional things that you need when you live in that area. So again, there is a beautiful balance there. And again, I think we are lacking the perspective to see that and to understand that.
Yeah, that's when we come back to the commandments, Henrik, the second commandment was we should not copy what God already created. But that's exactly what we do. We try to find all kinds of chemicals to create the effects that we want without looking carefully that what we need is already around us. We don't have to create anything. It's already there. But since we are so focused on the chemicals and the laboratory and the way we think we can control everything, we don't see what is right in front of our nose.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do you make of, like, you know, on top of that, then, human shall we call it, progress, you know, if you think that there's any good aspects to that when it comes to, well, we can begin on a very simple level of architecture and building and structure and farming and everything else. Are those natural things that are, you know, in your view? I know you don't take that view of positive and negative. It is what it is. But can those things be done, do you think, in a holistic manner that is in accordance with, you know, our surrounding?
Yeah, I think we can work the land and we can sow and we can reap what we sow. So that's also in the Bible. But it has to be in a respectful way. Now we just claim land and we say it's ours and we do whatever we think we can do with it. But of course, other animals live there too and plants live there too. So we need to do it more respectfully. And also the tools we use are not very harmonic, so to say. When we, for instance, use copper to dig in the ground, that's much better than iron, because iron destroys the magnetic field, but copper does not do that. So we can work on the land much differently than we do now, and that is more than the balance will be kept much better than currently. So we can do that, but we need to also understand our place. We cannot be rude and disrespectful to everything that is already there. So when we have respect for Mother Nature, for our home planet, for animals, for plants, then we can create the food we need, and the food we need is already there. So that's very important. But when you look at human consciousness, for instance, I think what happened around Syria is a really good example of the consciousness that is actually raising, according to my opinion, because what the trick that used to work with Libya, for instance, or Iraq, is just create a kind of dictator image and create bad publicity in the news. And then people all say, okay, it's good to attack that country because this or that, all kinds of nonsense reasons. But with Libya, that didn't work anymore, because everybody saw that there is no actually any reason, any ground for an attack. So that was withdrawn. And that to me is a good sign, because that means that we don't longer want to have that kind of trouble on this planet. The only real trouble that might be lying ahead of us is what is coming between Israel and Iran, because when we see what the messages are, especially from Israel, is that they actually really want to start a war with Iran, which is of course ridiculous, but that might be the biggest trouble that might come to us. So I think if we can raise our consciousness even further and we can stop that so-called Third World War, then I think we make a big step into the utopian world that lies in front of us.
Do you think that we have, if we look at the creation process of the human being, is there anything in that can explain our perspective or our behavior or the human condition, if you will? I mean, some people have speculated that it's the very intervention and the process of that mixing, if you will, of when the human beings were created that lies at the root of why things are in an imbalanced state. Would you agree with that?
I don't doubt the supremacy of God, and I think that God, that this plan of God works out really well, but we lack a little bit of understanding. I think God knew really well when he said that gods, with a lowercase g, should create man according to their own image, and everything that came from that. So I think God really knew what he did, or what God did. I can better say it like that. But of course, the game is not over yet, and the blue bloodlines will do everything which is in their power to remain in control, to keep their property, to keep their wealth, to keep the distinction between the red-blooded people, so to say. I don't think anybody has actually blue blood or any other color of blood. It's all the same blood, but it's a metaphor for people who think that they have a higher origin or a kind of divine bloodline. So it's part of our common legacy, and we have to deal with it. And I don't think we can solve that by creating a division. That's what I've been thinking for long. I thought, well, just kick them out from this planet, let them go to Nibiru or whatever where they come from, and get out of here, let them move to their father's house instead of terrorizing our mother's house for less long. But I now think that we do have to solve it together. So it doesn't really matter what kind of blood you claim to have. We need to solve this together because it's our common home planet. We live here together. We were all have a physical body. Mother Terra is our own mother of everybody, of every human being. So we need to sort things out. We live together in this house. And we have to stop making a mess. So yeah, we have a lot of things to do, and of course the way human beings were created has effect on what is going on now, because ever since the royal bloodline, so to say, tried to dominate the rest of the human beings, the full blood human beings, so to say. But that has to end. So that will end, but not by what we did in the French Revolution by cutting off their heads.
Yeah, we've seen that a couple of times, and we know how that goes. I mean, usually a consolidation of power, consolidation of wealth and everything else. I mean, that's been a downward slope ever since. I mean, even again, I think not everyone there, of course, but some people might have at that historical point have an intention that it's going to be, we're doing this for the betterment of mankind, etc. But It's we've been on a downward slope ever since. I mean, of course, moving away from the feudal system and stuff like that has had a good upswing. But if we look at it overall, though, I think human beings in the way that we live today and how regulated and controlled everything is with the state apparatus, I think we, to a certain extent, at least psychologically, through education and everything else, are much worse off than we were, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. There was even a geneticist linked that up on the website today, I believe, who argued that if we were to bring a human being here from Grecian times or whatever, the further back we go, the more they would be healthier, not only physically but also psychologically. You know, they were completely solid human beings. But the fact is that we're, I think, through our control apparatus and through the fact that we're trying to control and regulate so much and guide every single human experience, we're doing again ourselves actually a disservice. The variety, if you will, the diversity of different types of human beings is not there anymore. We're trying to homogenize everything, and it's very difficult, though, because I mean that's what is intended. That's what people think when they are thinking about improving. You know, that's what people do. What do we have to change in order to let go of that control drive, do you think, Johan, to just basically let things be at as they were intended to be, as they were designed, if you will?
Yeah, that question is quite simple, because I think by repenting and putting ourselves under God again, and everybody does that, then the problem is solved. So simple it can be. But that, of course, might take some time. Until that, I will just continue explaining what holy science is, and by doing that, I also explain what God is and what the position of man is in the whole story, and how we can behave and what that means, or when we behave in another way, what that also means. So yeah, it will change, but I agree fully with you that the way we live now is psychologically very disturbing. Everything is monitored. There are everywhere cameras. When I send an email, I have the feeling that NSA is watching it and checking what I'm saying, or at least recording it, and that very powerful computers are 24 hours a day watching everything, analyzing everything, and everything that is suspicious gets a red flag and is put in on a desk of somebody to have a look at it. So yeah, we are monitored 24 hours a day by people who are very afraid, by scared organizations. They think that the freedom of speech and the freedom of doing your own research is the biggest threat to this system.
Right.
And that is, of course, very, very strange, because freedom should be the thing we thrive for. But at the moment, we suppress freedom as much as possible. And that is, of course, psychologically very unhealthy. So yeah, that really has to change in order to make us full human beings again, holy human beings, or healed human beings again.
Yeah.
instead of what we are doing now.
Well, let me just read that quickly. It's from an article. Human intelligence is slowly declining, according to leading geneticists, and say, would you be surprised to hear that the human race is slowly becoming dumber and dumber? Despite our advancements over the last tens or even hundreds of years, some experts believe that humans are losing cognitive capabilities and becoming more emotionally unstable. One Stanford University researcher and geneticist, Dr. Gerald Crabtree, believes that our intellectual decline as a race has much to do with the with adverse genetic mutations, but human intelligences suffer for other reasons as well. And he continues to say, I would wager that if an average citizen from Athens of 1000 BC were to appear suddenly among us, he or she would be among the brightest and the most intellectually alive of our colleagues and companions, with a good memory, a broad range of ideas, and a clear-sighted view of important issues. Furthermore, I would guess that he or she would be among the most emotionally stable of our friends and colleagues. The geneticist began his article in the scientific journal Trends in Genetics. But anyway, that's, of course, is one scientific, one scientist's approach. But I don't know, something rings true for me there, actually, in terms of the emotional stability. And of course, the article continues and talks about food and things like that, that it's actually largely because of, you know, the bad food and, you know, pesticides are actually diminishing human intelligence. There's high fructose corn syrup in the food is actually making people stupid. There's research on this. So there are some explanations here as to why this is occurring, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So it's not only the physical food that makes us dumber, but it's also the mental food, what we see and what we perceive, what we read.
Yeah.
Television. When I, for instance, look at I don't watch much television, but when I look at it, when I see programs, I'm astonished by the stupidity of the level of the programming.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable. It's
yeah.
It's a shocker every time I turn on the TV.
Yeah, for me too. But when I compare it to when I was younger, and to my experience, it wasn't that stupid in those days. So TV is getting more and more stupid, and that's why maybe it has to adapt to the level of human beings. And I think indeed it is food related. So, and maybe there's also a plan behind everything, because the people who want to control, they know that it's much easier to control stupid people than people who are really clever.
Oh, absolutely. We're being farmed to that extent. I mean, the programming is becoming stupider and stupider for a very specific reason. And unfortunately, a lot of people are falling for that, you know?
Yeah, it's true. So it's really difficult for me to bring out holy science information. I send a newsletter out every week to a couple of thousand people in the Netherlands mostly, but it's really difficult to get a response from them, because most of them, and they're already open-minded, most of them call themselves awake, but most of them are not able to get what I'm trying to explain. So it's a hard job, especially now people are getting more stupid, to understand to help them understand the whole picture. So it's not an easy job I took on my shoulders voluntarily.
Yeah, it's interesting times, that's for sure. What are your thoughts on that? This actually is a cycle of sorts, that we have a natural rise and fall period of the human of human civilization, you know, intellectual capabilities and just overall how we live our lives. That this, if we look back historically, what we know so far, it seems to be pretty much the standard, that it rises and it falls, and it rises and it falls, and this is just, we're on the downslope of one of them now. I guess the difference now, though, is, well, I guess to preface that, I wouldn't know how people were thinking about themselves in the middle, in the Dark Ages, let's say the Middle Ages, but right now we believe, as you said before, that we're at the pinnacle of progress. Things are moving ahead, we're doing better than ever. So maybe that's the difference though here. But what about that cycle of up and down? So, I mean, there's not much we can do about that, right? It's just an external cycle that we're kind of stuck in, right?
Yeah, to me, time has three dimensions. But with the previous interview, you also put the links to the Clock of Giza, the research I did about the pyramids there, that showed the third dimension of time. The first dimension of time is the daily time. So in daytime, it's light, and in nighttime, it's dark. The second dimension is the yearly time. So in spring and summer, it's light, and in autumn and winter, it's dark. And the third dimension, that's the dimension called Plato called it the great year. And this is, has to do with a precessional cycle. And that means that in the Golden Age and in the Silver Age, it's more light. And in the Bronze Age and in the Dark Age, or the Iron Age, sorry, it's more dark. And according to my research, in 2012, we just left the most dark period, the Iron Age. And we entered in 2013, this year, entered the Bronze Age. And that cycle is very slow. It takes about 26,000 years for a full completion. So it takes about 6,000 years for us to reach the next golden level again. And I think that the stories of Atlantis, for instance, that was the previous golden age of consciousness. And then our consciousness was at the highest level. In those days, it's very easy for people to reach the seventh heaven of God, because they're already in that seventh heaven of God, I think. But yeah, where we come from, the most dark period, the Iron Age, then we are nearly all at the lowest level, the level of the lunatics. And it takes us really a kind of effort to climb up all the way to heaven, to level seven. So that's the dynamics we live in. So every time human beings are able to reach the highest level, and of course there have always been people who were enlightened and who found their way home again. But the majority, especially when the cycle is really down, Iron Age, it's really hard. But since we have just entered the Bronze Age, that means that we are now connecting to the level of the people from Sumeria and ancient Egypt, because those days was also the Bronze Age. And that's maybe perhaps also why I'm now more interested in the clay tablets, because they were created in the time people were actually in the Bronze Age. So the collective consciousness was higher than it was for the last 4,000 years. So there is, to me, a big cycle. It's also in my book, Understanding God. I explain it with all the dates and references. But that's a really slow cycle. In my first work about the Clock of Giza, I thought that in 2012 we will enter the Golden Age directly from the most dark period, spring directly from the winter. Uh-huh. That's not how it is. We first have the Iron Age, then we go to the Bronze Age, then to the Silver Age. And then finally we get the Golden Age, and then we go back from golden to silver to bronze, all the way back to iron. So that's the cycle, and it's different than in the first two videos. So I had to make a third video where I explained that.
Well, I mean, again, I think if we look at everything in nature that is comprised of those huge cycles, the macrocosmic level, which is, you know, monumental. It's like, you know, just think about it logically. If you're about to turn a big ship around, you know, it's, you're not going to do that like you would do with a small little, kayak or something like that. It takes a long time for these, cycles to come around. But when they do, they are so powerful and strong in their momentum that there is an advantage to that as well, because it means that it's not as easy to topple it or to prevent it from happening. It's a kind of, it leads a life of its own, if you will.
Yes. Yeah, that's how I see it too. But still, the people who try to control, you can call them the powers that be. I prefer to call them the powers that were, but some call them the Illuminati or the financial elite or whatever. I see it as a hierarchy of groups that all want to control. So that's their common theme. And on the basis of that, they work together. It's not a conspiracy. It's just working together. And
is a conspiracy.
It's not a theory. I mean,
exactly. It's a conspiracy fact, you know.
Exactly, but I think they were so powerful that they also can change the course of the boat a little bit. In my understanding, this boat would have been the course would have been changed further than it is now. So somehow they were able to slow the course a little bit, the course changement a little bit. And I think mostly 9/11 was their major effort in doing so, because that brought us, our collective consciousness, really down. It brought us back to enemy thinking, to fear and division for them being conquest and so on. So they tried to change the course of the big Titanic we're on, or the big ship. It's not a canoe. It's not a small boat, but. They do, at least that's what I think, they do change the timing a little bit. Otherwise, we would have been further. Otherwise, 2012 would have been the great year where the light would have hit more people than it did now. So that's at least my understanding. I expected a lot from 2012, also on the according of my interpretation of the Mayan calendar. We talked about it in the previous radio show. But my expectations were not met because most people are fully under the control of the matrix, so to say, of the old system. So the boat is turning, but it's slower than otherwise would have been if they were not trying to influence that as well.
All right, very good. Let's see if there's anything else you'd like to discuss or leave us with here for today, Johan, before we begin to wrap things up. Anything else on that list, if you will, of God, the creation of man, the commandments that we didn't get to yet?
No, yeah, everything I want to share is, of course, on my website. Maybe I can also mention that I looked at the celebration of Christmas. And when you look at the wording of Christmas, it's coming from Christ's Mass. So the Mass of Christ, and Mass is an ancient Latin word for disposal. So the literal meaning of Christmas is that you get rid of your own possibility to resurrect the Christ. So again, this also is the opposite of what most people think. They think that they celebrate the birth of Christ, but in fact they celebrate the permanent dismissal of the Christ. And that might be interesting to know before you call it again Christmas.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, Mass is like liturgy. Let's see here. You're getting rid of something, or go. It is the dismissal. It says there, Latin. Yeah, that's very interesting.
That's a disposal. Yeah, dismissal. That's the correct word. Yes.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So that's obviously more psychological warfare in terms of how they take. Is there another reason though that you think that they put it on the celebrations usually is on the winter solstice, because it has to do with the literal resurrection of the light coming back again once we've had those 3 days of darkness, right? So that's kind of that's the esoteric or occult level to this. But then that celebration, that original observation, if you will, of that process has been hijacked pretty much at this stage, right?
It's hijacked and it's reversed, and that's the genius of it, because the day that you can actually celebrate the possibility of the Christ becoming alive again, be resurrected from the dead, so put yourself under God again, the best day to do that is, of course, December 25, because the sun is showing you how you can make your way up again. That day is hijacked, and that is the naming has been chosen in such a way that you unconsciously dismiss the possibility of that resurrection of Christ. So it's there's no coincidence here. It is absolutely intentionally, and it's very intentionally evil, in my opinion.
All right. Well, John, thanks for coming on with us again. It's interesting. Glad to have you back and continue to talk more about your work. Please give us the website again, and also mention the lecture that you have upcoming in Romania.
Yeah, great. The website is pateo.nl, pateo.nl. And pateo, again, means no longer hidden. It's a Latin word. And if you go to that website, then you see on the left side all kinds of items where you can click on. If you click on agenda, then you see that there is, in May 2014, a whole week of Holy Science in Romania. The price is really low, so if you're able to travel there or actually you stay there, you can join us. The money should not be the reason for not joining it. And upcoming Sunday, so December 8, 2013, there is an online presentation, which is free. Everybody can tune in. Go to my website or the website of the School of the Holy Science.org, and then you find the details how you can join a live presentation given by me about the work of Leonardo da Vinci. And we also talked about in this show about that people were much more clever in the old days. Now, one of the most genius individuals that ever lived is, to me, Leonardo da Vinci. And his work is not as Dan Brown tried to explain. His work is really about holy science. He is one of the way makers, the way bringers, how do you say it correctly, the way givers of holy science. And if you want to know more, the way showers, that's the correct word. He's one of the way showers of holy science, just like a lot of people from ancient Greece. So that's the website, pateo.nl. On the main page, on the home page, you find the articles I talked about, also videos, also the books that I wrote. Most of them are free ebooks. You can read them online without charge. But my latest book, Understanding God, I do have to sell it because I need money to continue my way of living. I stopped with working about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Since then, I live from my savings. But at a certain moment, also the savings are gone. So at this moment, I have to be a little bit more careful. That's why I can't give away all my books anymore, and I sell them for money.
Okay. Well, that's how it works. There's nothing to be ashamed of. We with the money that we get, that's the means for us to continue the work and proceed and actually expand and grow. So if people like it, they should support it. That's how simple it is. Nothing wrong with that. So Pateo.nl, thank you, Johan, again for coming on. Great to have you back again.
Thank you very much, Henrik.
All right, there you have it. That's our program for today. As usual, we want to say thank you for listening and for being a member. You're invited to listen again when we're back with more in just a few days. We have some great programs coming up, by the way. We have our full list of upcoming guests in the radio archive. All right, well, please take care, and we'll speak to you again soon. My thanks to the team, and we'll say bye for now.